everybody out there in internet radio land listening to BBS Radio and my show, Gods and Goddesses. Have you seen my website, my picture and my background, picture of the sun, our big sun, which is a G2 main sequence white dwarf, or is it a yellow dwarf star? What a name, huh? Anyway, and so my point is that we are gods and goddesses in the making. That's also a little blurb down below that says we are co-creator gods in the making. And it's what I believe. My research, my years of study on the subject and living day after day, year after year, like you have. I'm 66 years old, not as old as some people, but I've learned a thing or two over my life. My mother, may God bless her soul, she passed away back in 99. She was 81. She got me on the path of spiritual development, and I'm eternally grateful for that. And so now one of the main things I'm concerned with is trying to help humanity to get in contact with the extraterrestrials, which I know, not believe, but know are out there. I think it would be so advantageous to us as a civilization. And we have tried before. I've mentioned it on previous shows. I'm not going to go into it right now, but I'm going to read from a book which will help in that regard. I'll explain it to you here in just a few minutes. But in the meantime, let me begin my show like I've done before and I'd like to do again. And that is, just like Joel Osteen starts his sermon with, now pick up your Bible and say the words like you mean it. And he goes into his blurb about the Bible. For my show, I'm going to repeat what I've said before. You don't have to join along. I'll just do it. And that is, because before I do, let me just say that the knowledge that there is life out there, and right now we don't know that we're not alone in the universe. We still think that there is no life out there. It hasn't been proven. We're kind of like stuck in a Copernican gap, if you will. Copernicus, over 500 years ago, about 500 years ago, had said that the Earth is not the center of the universe. Everything does not revolve around the Earth. We revolve around the sun, and the sun revolves around the center of the Milky Way galaxy, and our Milky Way galaxy revolves around the center of the universe. But right now, we're stuck in that gap where we don't know for sure if there's life or not. I've mentioned before, it is of my opinion that the universe is teeming with life. Because, and here is the what I was talking about, that I mentioned so many times before, and I'm going to mention it on every show. To prove that there is life out there, you don't need a piece of metal from a spacecraft, or you don't need NASA to land a probe on Europa, one of Jupiter's moons, and have it sink below the 60-some miles of ice there down underneath the ocean, which they believe exists underneath the ice, down to the bottom where there are hydrothermal vents to discover if there's possibly life there. That in of itself is a $1 billion mission. And what, just to take pictures of some fish, possibly, that exist down there by the hydrothermal vents? We don't need that, my friends. Logic can do it for us. The logic is this. All this life on Earth, all the different insects, fish, birds, reptiles, amphibians, mammals, thousands and thousands and thousands of different types, varieties, all the trees and flowers, all the fruits and vegetables. Did that happen by accident here on Earth? Logically, it could happen by accident anywhere in the universe. But if there is a creator, who is powerful and knowledgeable enough to create this life on Earth, then logically, that creator would have the power and knowledge to create either the same life or maybe different life like we can't imagine anywhere, and I do mean anywhere in the universe. So that's my initial blurb to start my show. I'm going to be doing it all the time because I think that we would be so much better off as a civilization. But right now there's a lot of fear, you know, fear of the unknown, fear of these extraterrestrials. Most of the movies we see or have seen, there haven't been many movies made in the past because of COVID. What a name, COVID. I don't like it. The virus. But then again, there's lots of viruses. The flu virus. The flu is a virus. But anyway, and it is so unfortunate that people's livelihoods have been affected by this virus, which came from China, they say. I don't know if that's true or not. But people haven't been able to work. I mean, just think of all the entertainment industry and how they're used to doing shows in front of thousands of people. Think about the cruise industry, which hasn't been going on. People unemployed presently within the United States, around the world, feel so badly for them. I wish it would end. You know, I've been praying. But I think if you believe, like I do, the Creator is in control, this is for a reason. This is happening for a reason. One reason is, it's a segue, if you will, for contact with an extraterrestrial species. Another reason that I've thought of, and I've mentioned before in the past, is that it is in preparation for some world-changing event that's coming, possibly an asteroid. And logically, that's happened before in the past. I mean, it's happened before in the past. Logically, it could happen again, even though we might not have visibility of it at this time. You know, the universe is a very big place, and asteroids are moving around, about all around, everywhere, you know, not only in our solar system, but just outside our solar system. But as far as this possibility of preparing us for eventual contact with an extraterrestrial species, and one of the reasons I think that they're not communicating with us or haven't come out into the open, there's been many, many instances of them making contact with people. People have seen UFOs, flying saucers. People have been abducted. But for the most part, the mainstream media does not cover this. They're kind of set to the side as being wackos out of the minds, or perhaps just trying to make a buck, you know, writing these books, which people really don't believe. And that's a problem we have as a civilization, not believing each other, you know, not believing the truth. And I believe in the truth myself. I know some things are better left unsaid, but I mean, I wouldn't tell you some very personal things about myself, because I don't see a purpose in it. Just to give you an example. And however, the truth, like with Roswell, for example, what is the truth with Roswell? What happened? What really happened there? Did the government, did the army recover a spaceship there that had crashed, and extraterrestrial bodies? And are we ready for the truth? Can you handle the truth? I can. I would look forward to contact with an extraterrestrial species, and I know there's so many out there. If you want to take a look at a really cool video that talks about ETs, and it will convince you, I think, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that they exist. It is called Fast Walker. That's the government term for flying saucers, UFOs. Fast Walker, or Unacknowledged. Two really good videos that will convince you if you're a doubter, if you're a non-believer, if you have an open enough mind to consider the possibility of what they're saying, I think it will change your mind. Then some people have closed minds, you know. But anyway, so I'm going to read from this book called The Contact Has Begun. Let me tell you a little bit about that. I've mentioned it before in my previous shows. This gentleman who wrote the book, his name is Philip Krapf, K-R-A-P-F. I think that's a German name. But anyway, he was an editor on the L.A. Times Metro Desk. Back in the 90s, he shared one of the Pulitzer Prizes on the L.A. riots. So he wrote this book after this experience he had, being abducted, taken aboard the spaceship called the Goodwill, which is parked, I don't know if it still is, back then it was, behind the moon. And what they do is this race of extraterrestrials called the Verdants, they cruise around the universe with their extremely, extremely advanced technology, spaceships that are like a mile in diameter, that can travel thousands of times the speed of light, you know, because they go interdimensional, you know. Space is a fabric which can be warped, and there's also wormholes and black holes that connect one dimension to another, the material universe to a parallel universe, kind of like a fourth dimensional thing. You know, we're in the third dimension, but fourth dimensional is like the spirit world, and where there is nothing material, yet there's a lot of things that exist, even in this realm of thought, you know. So they can go from A to B within the universe in very quick fashion because they know how to handle the universe as it is, you know, through their many millions of years existing longer than we have. And they've been traveling space for, I think, 290 million years. Imagine that. Supposedly, they are the dominant species in the universe. They might be out there listening to my radio show right now. I think they're cool. I would like to meet them. I mean, talk about intelligence. It would be mind-expanding to have a conversation with one of these beings, you know? And on the large scale of things, they're kind of like us, you know? They're just living their lives, doing what they enjoy doing, and that is exploring the universe and discovering new species, you know, cataloging it. And they go on with their life on a daily basis. They don't sleep because they consider that an abbreviated form of death and a waste of time. So their main passion in their lives is learning. Bottom line, learning new things. So imagine that if you didn't have to sleep at night, you'd have all those extra hours to be reading books, having conversations with people, learning new things. So these are kind of like the Grays, maybe 5 feet tall, a little bit tall, 5 feet two, 3 inches tall. They've got gray skin or tannish skin or tannish green skin and big dark eyes, kind of like slanted, and the ears a little bit pointed like Dr. Spock, Mr. Spock of Star Trek. And they are the dominant species. They've colonized many worlds throughout the universe. And so they abducted, or they don't prefer that term, actually. They consider something more appropriate, which is an unsolicited visitation which is cool. So he was on board their spaceship for 3 days. And what they do is that they go around the universe and they come up to an uncharted solar system and they monitor the planets. And if they discover life, you know, some kind of intelligent life, then they'll set up an observation post, so to speak, and then they'll be looking in on them during their evolution until they're ready to make their first steps into outer space, you know, like with us back in the late 50s, early 60s, you know, Sputnik and then the Alan Shepard mission. What was that? It was a Mercury mission, I think. First man in space, and then John Glenn orbited the Earth a few times. That was a pretty dangerous mission. He almost didn't make it. I don't know if you knew that. But anyway, so as the story goes with these new species that they encounter, if they're not peaceful enough, if they've got warlike tendencies, and that's something we do, right? With all the wars we've had in the past, need I remind you how many we've had? They make a decision whether or not to allow them to go into outer space, and they can sabotage the spaceships very easily with their advanced technology. So they can keep these beings planet-bound as long as they have to prevent them from taking their warlike ways into outer space, which is supposed to be a peaceful domain. Yeah. That's why I don't like Star Wars, the movie Star Wars. That, to me, that is just typical of the warlike mind of human beings who are probably mostly young souls and can't see the big picture and would rather die in a blaze of glory than live their lives out to a ripe old age, if you know what I mean. No offense. But anyway, these burdens, they are awesome. And if you read the book, The Contact Has Begun, and Phil Kraft has written some other books. I actually communicated with him when I was in Caracas, Venezuela, my last duty assignment in the Army. And so we exchanged a few emails, and very interesting fellow, to say the least. And I was going to read something from the book. I was going to try to find it. I've got the book. I was trying to find it on the internet, a PDF version, so I wouldn't have to hold the book and I could just read it. But anyway, and what I'm going to read, one of the things I'm going to read is, if we did have contact with an extraterrestrial species that was not bent on our destruction like so many of these negative alien movies we've seen before in the past, which is absolutely ridiculous because with all that technology, I mean, they have control of antimatter. And I mean, just 1 ounce of antimatter could disintegrate our whole planet, you know. So totally ridiculous, all these movies you've seen, how we get into fights with them and have this very limited kind of technology and it's back and forth. And, oh, Hollywood, you know, young souls seeking to give their fellow young souls what they want, that supply and demand of these really cool special effects without any regard to reality. It's just fantasy. And I think now because of COVID, the fantasy violence is on its way out the window, you know. All these great actors, come on, you can find other work out there, some other great acting jobs without portraying some fantasy violence hero, fantasy action hero. You know, I'm not saying that we shouldn't continue on acting. We need to focus and concentrate on more meaningful, realistic movies, making those kind of movies that deal with real-life people, true stories, you know? Enough of this fantasy stuff. It's gone away. It's gone away, you know? People don't want to see that anymore. You know, COVID, now that's reality. People dying from a virus around the world. Case people getting sick. We don't even have a vaccine yet. and it's not right. These fantasy violence movies, you know, what do they take us for? Fools? Yes, you know, it does look kind of neat. You see people getting blown away. John Wick 3, no offense to Keanu Reeves. I saw him in his new movie, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, or New Adventure, whatever it's called. And he's a pretty cool guy, you know. I like him, Keanu Reeves. He did a good job acting in that movie. It's really funny, you know. Good for a few laughs. That's okay. You know, that kind of stuff. Time travel, going back in time. It's kind of cool because that is true. Time travel is possible, my friends. You want to read a book that deals with a man who was abducted by this race of extraterrestrials. It is entitled Coevolution. And these ETs have triangular-shaped, like pyramid-shaped spaceship, and they can time travel. They're extremely, extremely intelligent. Anyway, Keanu Reeves, how many people did he kill in John Wick 3? Like 112 people. We just become so desensitized to that kind of violence, you know. I remember I went to a movie one time, it was in the past, many years ago, and they showed this one guy getting cut in half by a cable. You know, it had been like a steel cable that had become used as a weapon, I think, whipping at people. Some people in the audience were laughing at that. You would laugh at a person getting cut in half? You really would? What if it was you? You know, that wouldn't be so funny if it was you, right? So you see the level of intelligence. You just need to get smarter, you know, get stronger, wiser, get better, become better, better human beings. You know, can you do that? Can we do that? Get away from that fantasy violence, and Star Wars, shooting, you know, those little laser beam things that they shoot at other spacecraft. You know, first of all, that advanced technology that would have, like we do have that same technology with F-16s, F-15s, lock-on technology. One shot, that's it. None of these multiple shots trying to hit something. Ridiculous, ridiculous. Lock-on technology, I mean, we discovered that. Imagine ETs, if they wanted to, it would be game over, you know, right away. No competition whatsoever. Anyone who thinks otherwise is just childlike, you know, in their intelligence. But no offense, I don't mean to offend anyone out there. And I know some of you might be young souls, but we're still souls, you know, evolving. Co-creator gods in the making. If you can die, you're a co-creator god in the making. Once you do pass away, eventually, hopefully at a ripe old age, because every day here on Earth is a blessing. The older you are, the more time you spend here on Earth, the more you can learn. It's all about learning. Then when you finally do transition, you will have all that knowledge that you can take with you. That's all, the only thing you can take with you, and love, too. Just like Patrick Swayze said in Ghost. He says it's great. The love that you learn here on Earth, you take it with you. That's it. You can't take your money. Can't take clothes. And so then you go to the spirit lands or heaven where the spirits exist. Suffice it to say, without getting into any more details, you heard me, if you listened to my previous shows, I've elaborated on that subject, but the point is you stay there, you're in the spirit, right? Just like in Ghost, spirit form, which looks almost exactly like the human physical body. I watched a movie last night called The Last Temptation of Christ with Willem Dafoe. And he's a really cool actor. I love him. He's great. He was in Aquaman, you know. So he played Jesus Christ in the movie, and it's a different story than the Bible's version of Jesus. And they say that right at the beginning. It doesn't follow the scriptures, but it's kind of experimental. It's a really good movie. I like it. The Last Temptation of Christ was made, I think, back in the 90s, or maybe the late 80s. And the theory that they believe in for that movie is that Judas deliberately, he went and told the Romans, he turned Jesus into the Romans at the request of Jesus. Jesus asked him to. So that's different than the Bible where Judas betrayed Jesus. And I believe that. I actually believe that Jesus, and I've told you before, I don't believe everything in the Bible, that Jesus asked Judas to turn him in because he had to die on the cross, right? Plain and simple. And why did he have to die on the cross? So he could be resurrected. All the miracles that Jesus performed, how can we forget those? You know, turning water into wine, walking on the water, calming the seas, feeding the 5,000 people on the Sermon on the Mount, healing the lepers, taking demons out of people, depossessing them, healing the blind, the paralyzed, the transfiguration there on the Mount. So many things, and maybe other things that we don't know about, that the Bible didn't capture. You know, it's possible. Raising Lazarus from the dead, and that's what I was going to talk about. Because when he raised Lazarus from the dead, in the movie, The Last Temptation of Christ, you know, the character Saul, who later became Paul. Saul, Paul. So he, in the movie, winds up killing Lazarus. But first he comes up to him and says, "How are you doing? How are you feeling?" "I'm feeling all right." You know, he's kind of bummed out. Maybe not bummed out, but just overwhelmed by the experience, you know. And so Saul asks him, "Well, what was it like?" He said, "It was kind of the same as this life." So I made a mental note of that. Oh, is that right? Okay. Well, it's kind of like this life when you die and transition to the spirit lands or heaven. And so then he reaches down, pulls a knife out, stabs him. And then the next scene you see Judas talking with Jesus. Well, you know, they had to do that because that was your greatest miracle. Now, it makes sense that they killed him because they didn't want your miracles to proliferate. Or what's a better way of putting it? They didn't want you to continue to get credit for all these miracles, you know. Anyway, so The Last Temptation of Christ, I like that movie. Back to the burdens. I'm going to read and talk at the same time. So I'm going from my chair to my stand workstation here, like I've done before. Let me see if I can find that PDF on the internet. Hold on, please. I'm going to log in. Get my water. I have a stand workstation. Well, actually, it's just a stand workstation. I type in my job. That's what I do. And I like it so much. Been doing it now for over 2 years. Come on. Well, you know, these computers, they never work when you want them to, you know. Sometimes they're slow as molasses. Okay, here's a link here. Let me see if it works. Well, I might have found it. Oh. Contact has begun. Let me use my mouse here and download now. Don't want to do that. Anyway, I can read it from the book. Just prefer the hands-free version. You know what I mean. So last week, I asked you to go outside and look up at the stars between 9 and 12. Did you do that? I did. They're out there. And if we did make contact with them, I mean, without a doubt, what do you think would happen? Do you think people would freak out, like with War of the Worlds back in the 30s on the radio show? Panic. Oh, my God. Oh, I'm so afraid for my life. These aliens are going to kill us. Well, like I said, if they wanted to, they could have done that a long time ago. We just need to get smarter. Come on. Smarter, wiser, stronger. Better, yes? Evolve, come on people, evolve. Get to the higher level. Come on, you gotta do that before you die. We all do. There's not a moment to waste, my friends, because tomorrow is not guaranteed for any of us. Am I right or am I right? Why do I say this? Why? Who gives me the authority to speak like this? Because I'm a co-creator God in the making, okay? I'm going to be a god one day, sometime in the future. I get together with my soulmate. Oh, she is so beautiful. As much as I love my wife here on earth, my soulmate, and you have your own soulmate too, whether you're male or female. And when you do make contact, I mean, they could be off on another galaxy living an incarnation, you know. But when you finally do get together after going through the life on planets, evolution, at the end, you know, when you reach that level of evolution where you're like ready to be a co-creator God and create your own solar system, you know, by the powers that exist in the universe, the cosmic forces, using those words like the Bible says, and being was a word, well, you can't be the supreme creator, the creator of the universe, but you can be like the supreme creator. And that's part of the supreme creator's plan, was to put these things into effect so that you could be like him, her. I say him, her, I mean, because the supreme creator is both male and female. He's an extreme, absolutely incredible intelligence and the power. I told you before, the magical power. Supreme Creator is just beyond comprehension, and there's nothing else to say besides that. I'm trying to, well, maybe I should give up on reading, trying to find this PDF version. I almost had it. I thought I did. Let me try again. Try something. Well, there it is, but no, I have to download it. So I'm going to read from the book. Anyway. So he's on board the spaceship. Philip Kraft is. And he's talking with ETs. They put him through what they call indoctrination, orientation, so that he could eventually write this book. That was the purpose of him being abducted up and taken up there for 3 days. So he went through all these briefings and meetings. And so let me start reading. This is not a good point, but, well, I think it is. They were talking to him. They said, your long history of warfare, which we have personally observed, told us we were looking at a savage race, Tom continued. On the group level, we witnessed international conflict, corruption, thievery, the rape of the environment, the plunder of natural resources, and the unspeakable cruelty of genocide. On an individual level, we observed mendacity, thievery, murder, child abuse, hypocrisy, sadism, and cowardice of epidemic proportions. Cowardice, my friends. All of these things spoke of a depraved species. See, if we weren't so, there weren't so many cowards in this world, maybe we could make contact with ETs. But closer scrutiny revealed individual accomplishments in the arts, music, literature, and architecture that demonstrated a surprising nobility of spirit and mind. It was these redeeming qualities that caused the verdants to change their minds about us. Humankind's status was upgraded to acceptable after the verdant scientists had enough data to confidently predict that the species could safely be welcomed into the intergalactic community with certain reservations. So, it wouldn't be a stretch to say that humankind will find its place in the heavens thanks to the refined, intelligent, gentle, cultured people who walk among us. It was their contributions that caught the verdant's attention and convinced them that the species was worth nurturing. The nurturing of the human species presented a unique challenge, they said, one they had never faced before. Typically, when helping to prepare other species to make the transition from planet-bound animal to star traveler, the verdant simply shared their technology with the entire civilized species. But that formula won't work because of humankind's unrivaled diversity. Now, I'm going to shift now to another chapter, because I've read that before. So, this is chapter 10 called The World to Come. Phil said, "This is so fantastic," I blurted out at one point in a moment of unrestrained enthusiasm. "I just can't imagine what life on Earth is going to be like in 100 years, 1,000 years. "Well, it's certainly going to be different," the one called George said. "All these ETs have different names. They even have name tags on their robes. They wear robes." "Well," I said, "tell me what it's going to be like. I know I won't be around to see it myself, but I have such a yearning to know, to understand." And then a strange thing happened. I don't know if it was from fatigue, from the long hours of absorbing information, or if the full impact of the experience finally took hold in my psyche. But I was overcome with emotion. I felt that I was on the verge of weeping. I hung my head to control my misting eyes. I was choked up and did not speak for fear that my voice would crack. I felt ashamed that composure had eluded me for a full minute. The verdants themselves simply waited until the episode passed and I was able to collect myself. "There is no need to be embarrassed," George finally said. "You are simply grieving. That very human emotion is quite normal under the circumstances." "Grieving?" I asked. "Grieving for what? For whom?" "For a missed opportunity," he replied. "You are glimpsing the glorious future, and you are aware that it is tantalizingly just beyond your grasp. And because of that, you are angry and frustrated, and you feel cheated. But that is the nature of life." He was right, of course. Oh, how I wished I could have been born a century later. But wishing wasn't going to make it happen, and I had to deal with the reality of the here and now. "Tell me, what will it be like?" I pleaded. And he's talking about when we do make contact with the extraterrestrials. "We can't predict the future," George continued. "No one can, but based upon our experiences, and I've got I think we can. There are some ETs that can predict the future, maybe to about 100 years out, but that's another story. I'll continue. But based on our experiences, we can, with great accuracy, tell you what can be expected in general terms. Humankind will take its place in the Intergalactic Federation of Sovereign Planets sometime early in the 21st century, if all goes according to the established timetable, the Burdens told me. I'm going to take a drink of water. Now check this part out. In the short run, in the first 100 years after that event, great strides will be made on the road to curing the ills that have plagued the species from the time that humankind took its first halting footsteps upon Earth. These will not just be physical ailments, but afflictions of the spirit and social order as well. Many diseases of the body will be conquered. There you go, my friends. COVID, cancer, heart disease, all those can be cured if we make contact with extraterrestrials. Are you ready for that? Yes or no? Continuing on. Intelligence levels will rise. Poverty will start to disappear. Common courtesy and civility will flourish. Mr. Trump, you should take notice of that. I love you, Mr. Trump, but you say some things that are wrong. You shouldn't call people names, for one thing. Didn't your mother ever tell you that? Come on. I love you. You can do it. You can change. God can change your heart. Besides, I think you're on your way out, Mr. Trump. I don't, based on what I've read, what I know, there's not a hope in hell you're going to be able to change things. Because the only possibility I think Mr. Trump has is saying that the mail-in voting was unconstitutional and the Supreme Court won't uphold that. That's the only chance he's got. Everything else is just, you know, just small numbers. Fraud, voter fraud, voting irregularities, dead people voting, people voting twice. I mean, it's just small numbers. They won't make that much of a difference at all. Continuing on. Nations will begin to consider war unthinkable. Crime will plummet. And other antisocial behavior will wane. But progress does not happen overnight, and it will be several centuries before humankind achieves what today would be considered utopia. Within 1,000 years, humankind will have been transformed. Great spaceships will be exploring other galaxies. In the absence of poverty, sickness, war, and crime, complete individual happiness will be a universal reality. Illiteracy will be but a notation in history books. Lifespans will have increased dramatically. Every citizen of Earth will have any creature comfort necessary to live satisfying and rewarding lives of peace and contentment. There will be abundance in the land, and every living person will share in it. The air and water of Earth will be as pristine and pure as it was before man's ancestors began to befoul them. The rainforests will be restored, the rivers and oceans cleansed. Keys and locks will become a thing of the past, as will police forces and theft insurance, for no person would even consider stealing another person's property or engaging in any other form of antisocial behavior. People will move about the world in great ultra-modern vehicles without concern for their personal safety or security. National armed forces will have disappeared as unfathomable relics of an insane past. The Verdants went on and on, painting a magnificent verbal picture of a world that I was incapable of visualizing. "I'm dumbfounded," I said. "It's incomprehensible to me. How, what processes can bring such revolutionary changes? You're essentially talking about the restructuring of human nature as I know it." "It's really not all that complicated," George said. I got the feeling that this particular alien, because he was doing most of the talking on this subject, might have been the designated expert on human psychology. "As we told you earlier, the human species has been assessed as being essentially moral and worthy of nurturing. Think about it. Without exception, all of the mischief in your world is and has been the handiwork of a small percentage of your population. We judge that element to be about 20% of the total. So all the bad guys, the tyrants, the dictators, the bullies, they're a small minority people. We are the majority. We can get them. We can beat them. You know what I'm saying? Continuing on. No longer would that minority of troublemakers run roughshod over the world's population, making war, as they do, as they've done, and committing crimes against people and property. Tyrants and criminals, both of the street thug and white-collar variety, will be isolated from the mainstream and effectively rendered incapable of inflicting their rascality, how about that for a cool word, upon the innocent masses. Such isolation would not take the form of prisons as we know them today, but rather a benign and compassionate separation from the main body of decent people in which they will live out their lives in comfortable seclusion. About that. Naturally, they will not have the option of reproducing, I was told. Who will oversee these changes, I asked. Will the Verdants become the rulers of Earth? Oh, no, not at all, George replied. Mankind will maintain complete and sovereign control over its own destiny. We will merely offer you guidance, which you will be free to accept or reject. But based upon our experiences with other alien species, we fully expect that the lessons you learn from us will lead to a hastened social evolution as you apply our teachings to deal with your human problems. It will be a totally natural process. I may have touched their nerve because one of the star travelers made it a point to assure me that while the Verdants are the dominant species in the known universe, the only species that has colonized other worlds, they are not rulers. Every species, he said, is an equal part of the whole. There is no superpower as such. Hey, well, what about us, huh? Superpower. That's why the United States, as much as I love the United States and I want God to continue blessing us, it's not really fair to call us a superpower. Because wouldn't that, if you were China or Russia, just think. Like competition, you're saying, hey, we're better than you are. We're better than you are. Not a cool thing to say to someone when they have nuclear weapons, right? Every world maintains its sovereignty while participating equally in the intergalactic community. Earth and humankind will share a similar status. Well, that's it for the reading. I think I'll take the phone here, because I am using the phone, by the way. Just to drink water first. Okay, now I'm going to go outside here. The dogs have come out, two of our dogs. Come out to do their thing. I'm out in my backyard now, looking up at the sky, evening sky. It's great. Now that's got a neighbor. My neighbor has a dog, and our dogs just love to play around with it, running up and down the fence and barking at each other. Get some good exercise. Anyway, that's part of my show. That's cool. I don't want to stop him. I'm looking up at the sky, stars. So, my friends, so just to summarize what I said, I'm running out of time. If we made contact with another species, another race, beings out there, and for the most part, they're peaceful, and they're concerned about us, you know, they're concerned that we're doing damage to our world. Irreversible damage, you know, the pollution, global warming. They're very loving beings, you know. They want us to love them back, but with our history of warfare, you know, the military mind is shoot first and then ask questions later. And that's one reason, just one reason why they haven't come down here in the open, you know, landed on the lawn of the White House, if you know what I mean. Kind of like in the day the world stood still, you know. That's the frame of mind. But wouldn't it be nice? Like I said, they can help us. And one thing I forgot to mention, I've said this in other shows before, is that they... We're going to do this. This was all planned out. They had the processes in place, and everything was going according to plan. They were abducting ambassadors and deputy envoys, that's what they called them, as they have done before in the past with other beings on other planets and other solar systems and other galaxies. That same process, you know, once they had determined that we were acceptable to be admitted into the Intergalactic Federation of Sovereign Planets, then the process was in place and going along smoothly. You know, I mentioned before how with our history of warfare, we were kind of borderline. But they changed their minds because of the really good people in this world, the lovers, the artists, the musicians, the caring, decent people, and as I mentioned, the majority of people, it's just a small minority of the troublemakers. And then, you know what happened? 9/11 happened, and then, oh my God, these people, they're going to kill themselves, maybe. So they changed their minds about us. Because of that, they stopped everything. They stopped the process. Even though it wasn't really our fault, but still, you know, we, as human beings, we need to take responsibility for all of our actions, you know, not just a few. I mean, we can blame it on the whoever, the Saudi Arabians, the Iraqis, the Afghans, whoever, Al-Qaeda. But the bottom line is, they're human beings also. And, you know, it's just unfortunate that it had to happen. So contact was never established. It was supposed to have happened around 2010, if my calculations are, I mean, if I remember correctly. And one thing that they would have done just before contact, and, you know, one of the plans was to go out to the mainstream media. You know, these people that were abducted had the right qualifications so that once the mainstream media was convinced that this was real, then that was like the last step in that contact, you know. And then there would have been, they were going to transform this desert land in the American Southwest into a grand overnight. But that never happened. And so we never had a summit, never had that contact. So I've got to say goodbye, my friends. It's been an interesting hour. And thank you very much for tuning in. Many thanks to BBS Radio for all they do, for this opportunity, for me to talk to you. I love you very much, and may the Creator of the universe bless you and help you in any way you need it. May the Creator bless all of us. And anyway, we need it. Take care. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.